Well, it's really good to be with you. My son's really happy that that we came to this church this morning, because I picked him up from a friend's house. He'd gone to bed about 4 or 5 a.m. and so he hadn't had any breakfast and was feeling groggy. So a church that was an hour and a quarter journey away, where he could just sleep all the way here, and then you gave him breakfast. I mean, you're in the good books. Really is. So it's good. It's really good to be with you. I always enjoy and look forward to coming to Penny Kites. It's actually my second time in three days of coming to Wales. I was up in Colwyn Bay just a couple of days ago, and you might be interested to know, but there's explorations about a potential Nazarene church plant taking place there. We've forged a partnership with a Christian charity that works with homelessness and addiction. And so we're going to be buying a building that they will rent off us, and we're giving them a below market rate, but still a reasonable rate. And then we're going to be using some of that money that we generate to fund some ministry. So it creates a sustainable ministry model from the outset. And so the charity will do its work. We will seek to draw alongside, and we'll just see what comes from that. So please do be in prayer. It's a long time since we've had three churches in Wales. The Cardiff church closed many, many years ago, and so it really would be good to just to see some growth in the kingdom of God, and to partner with another Christian agency and just see some blessings flowing. So please do be in prayer for that. My phone has decided that Penny Kai doesn't give it a signal. So does anybody have there's one. It meant my Bible passage wasn't coming up on my screen, you see. So I'm going to... Okay, yeah, that's great. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. It is John chapter 21:15-19. I'm looking for a little bit of participation, though first. What do we know about the life of Peter? Peter, the apostle. Let's try and see if we can get them in chronological order. So what's the first time we hear about Peter? Fisherman. Okay, great. So he's fishing away, and what happens? He gets called, yeah, him and his brother. And we've already had a reference to that this morning, haven't we, just a few minutes ago. And I really do think what was mentioned there, we've got to really get our heads around that, because it's quite staggering. I don't know how many of you, if you were getting on with your job, and then some person, I mean... possibly Jesus had a little bit of a reputation, maybe already, but he certainly wasn't, you know, a few years down the line, Jesus, where Peter knows the full shebang. At this point, this is a bloke coming up to you in your workplace and saying, quit and follow me. I don't know how many of you would do that. Some of you might think, oh, I'd love for somebody to walk into my workplace and tell me to quit. So fair enough. But even if you wanted to, the mortgage, explaining it to your spouse when you get in, explaining it to your kids that the holiday's cancelled because there's no income anymore, it's staggering. So in Peter's life, in his journey of faith, do we consider this to be a good start? Is this something that's positive in the life of Peter, or do we consider this to be a bit of a low point? Where would we put it? Yeah, a good one. Yeah, he's quite brave, isn't it? I don't know if his wife agreed. I imagine she took a little bit of convincing, especially as he then disappears for 3 years, wandering around the hillside following this preacher. But occasionally he brings back some baskets of free fish and bread and stuff. So, you know, there are the upside. So we start off with a high. What's the next one that we can recall? You might not know them in chronological order, so just call out the ones which you know of, and I'll try and guide us through the chronology. What's another incident with Peter?
Jesus tells him to make the fishermen of men.
I'll make you a fisher of men. So that's his call again, his call into the ministry, right at the start there. Any others? Yeah, he's hanging around with Jesus. Yeah, so he's kind of just there in the background. There's some specific events where he's kind of a major character. Pardon? He's the one that denies Jesus. Yeah, we know. So we know that that's just before the crucifixion. So that's like later in the chronology. So we'll hold that one. He goes for a bit of a swim with Jesus. There you go. And that's the next one as well. Did you know that was the next one, Keith? Yeah, he had an inkling. Yeah, so that's the next one. So again, we've got this water imagery again, and so they're out. They're on the waves. Remember that Jesus had told them that he was going somewhere, not with them. And then they're on the boat sailing across, and then suddenly Jesus appears to them. Now, if it couldn't have got weirder, a guy turning up at your work asking you to quit your job, well, it can. It can. The same guy, next time, he's walking on the water. At least Jesus was on the beach the first time. Now he's on the water. And he's walking towards you. Now, I don't know about you. And actually, in the Bible passage at this point, it does say people are scared. And actually, that's reasonable, isn't it? You'd be compelled. You would want to keep watching. But you would be terrified. And then Peter, we all know the story, don't we? And Peter calls out, and there's this interaction, and they discover that it's Jesus. But Peter's like, if it is you, tell me to come out. Now, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't say that. Because whatever it is, or whoever it is, they're clearly quite powerful and potentially quite scary. So what if this person isn't Jesus? Well, you don't give them, oh, prove it by telling me to come and walk. Because what if it isn't? And then you step out and you're in big trouble, aren't you? But anyway, that's what Peter does. And I think one of the hallmarks of Peter, impetuous, I don't think he thought. Because I reckon the next day, him and the disciples were saying, Peter, what if that hadn't been Jesus and it had been some scary demon that just told you to get out of the boat and walk on water because it wanted to drown you? And Peter went, oh yeah, I didn't think of that. Oh, phew, thank goodness it was Jesus. But it was Jesus. And so Peter gets out of the boat and he walks on water. Now, is that a high point? Is that a low point? Is that where does that go in his journey of faith? Yeah, pretty high. But what happens to him? It quickly becomes a little bit lower, doesn't it? So he ends up sinking because his faith was strong. But then what happens to him? He starts to look at the surrounding circumstances. He's distracted from Jesus and he sees the surrounding circumstances. How many times have we been in those circumstances in life? Where it's Jesus, 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 we're raising our hand, we're praising, we're worshipping, we're enjoying the fellowship, and then something happens in life that brings it all crashing down, and suddenly that thing in life appears bigger than the person of Jesus. Even though the person of Jesus has been walking on water, even though the person of Jesus has done incredible things in our lives and we have a real and rich testimony and we recognize who he is, the things of life can sometimes appear bigger. And then the sinking comes. So that story, it's got some high, it's got some low. But even in that low, I don't know about you, Peter at least got a few steps of walking on water. And I don't know, I would take that. If somebody told me you'll end up swimming, but you'll walk on water, I would be like, Micah, get your phone out because I want you to make a TikTok video of the first few steps. I walked on water. You know, that. So it's an incredible event, but it's not flawless. What's the next one? Any other events in his life? He cut someone's ear off again, yes. So just before the denial. So it's not the next one chronologically, but we will get there, yes. Big catch of fish. Yes, he was. Yep, yep. Throw the nets on the other side. Yep. Any others? Yeah, he's there feeding the 5,000. Yeah. Yeah. The transfiguration. There you go. There's another big one, isn't he? But it's not the next one. That's the next but one. the next major one. I mean, he's here. There's lots of these stories where he's kind of a bit part character. Okay, yeah, there's the healing as well, yeah. And that might be Book of Acts, actually. Peter's statement of faith. You see, this is an advertisement for theological study because he's going through the chronology. Let's give Keith a hand. That's impressive. That's impressive. Yeah. So Jesus has started to build up a bit of a reputation. Not surprisingly, he's been walking on water. He's been healing the sick. And then Jesus says to them one day, "So who do you say that I am?" You know, that's an important question sometimes. See, we're all sat around having meals here. Now, I recognize most of you, but I don't know most of you really well. But it may well be that there are people here today where you've been hanging around in the proximity of Jesus, weighing up the people of Jesus, the stories of Jesus. But at some point, there's a question that you need to reflect upon. Who do you say that Jesus is? Just going a little bit deeper, because there's more to it than a lovely breakfast and singing some songs. It means something. And Jesus at this point decides, you know what, this group of men and whoever else was there, they've been around enough now. Because, you know, the miracles of Jesus, they weren't just like magician's tricks. They weren't just like publicity stunts. They were signposts. They were things that pointed. So you were supposed to look at the miracle and then ask yourself the question, who can do this? Who does this suggest this person is? And so Jesus says, right, you've seen a few signposts now. You've had a few things pointing you. So who are people saying that I am? And more importantly, who do you say that I am? And then Peter blurts out, "You're the Messiah." Now that's a huge thing to say. High point. Yeah, yeah, another high point in the life of Peter. A brave thing to say. Now, I don't know, was he saying what everyone was thinking? Or did he just blurt this out of his own head, that he'd been thinking it and this was an opportunity to express it? Did the others look at him with horror like, "Oh my word, that's a bit far, Peter"? Or did they go, "Oh, I'm glad Peter said it because I've been thinking this, I've been wondering this, but I've not had the courage to say it." So was Peter kind of like a leader of men? I don't know. I would suggest that. But yeah, we're now up to about halfway through Matthew's gospel, a little bit further perhaps. Who do you say that I am? And then we have, as was pointed out to us before, the transfiguration. You know, I love the transfiguration. If you've ever been to the Holy Lands, and if you go on the Jordanian side, then you can go on to Mount Nebo, and they've got a statue built there, because that's the last place that Moses got to in his physical life. You remember Moses, because the people didn't believe in the prophecy that had been declared to them, and so God says, right, this generation will not see the promised land, or you'll only see the promised land. You won't enter it. And so that's as far as Moses gets. And I love the transfiguration story because I can imagine Moses in the heavenlies and the angel calls and says, whatever room Moses was hanging out in, and goes, right, it's the time. Jesus is up on the mountain. It's the transfiguration. And Moses goes, yes, I'm finally going to land on the promised land. And Moses is there alongside Elijah. So you've got Moses in this story. He represents the law, the rules which defined Israel, which defined how they were going to live in a way that pointed towards God and which reflected that God governed them. And then you have Elijah, which represents the prophets, which is kind of the narrative, the story of God speaking in real time, saying, this is what I want you to do, this is where I want you to go. So it's kind of like Moses is the structure and Elijah is the artistry. And it's the two sides of the same coin that just bring the story of God together. And Jesus is the fulfillment. It all comes together, the law and the prophets in him. So you could say that for Peter to be there at this point is a high point. And it is. It shows that he's part of this inner circle of disciples. But he opens his mouth, doesn't he? And he says, let's build not one, but three altars. So you see what he's doing there? You've got Moses, the law, Elijah, the prophets, that point towards Jesus, but Peter kind of levels the platform. Which, if you think about that and take it into its detail, what does it mean to take something that is not divine and put it on a level playing field with the divine? That's blasphemy. That's idolatry. He's either bringing Jesus down or he's raising Moses and Elijah up above their status. One of the two, or maybe both. And so it's almost like this incredible moment. And if they did it in a movie, it would be crescendo, music, drums, cymbal, dun, 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 build, 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 smokes, fire, action. And then it would be as everybody then looks at Peter. Why did you have to open your mouth? You've walked on water. You've declared he's the Messiah. You were on an up. And now you've just gone and blasphemed. You've just brought the house of cards tumbling down. And Jesus has to rebuke him because Peter's been reading the signs. Now, I kind of feel for him because he wasn't saying it in a way where he wanted to drag Jesus down. He was just carried away in the emotion of the moment and the experience. And he was like, this is incredible. And there's three people here. So let's build three altars, three incredible things. So it's a low point. But it's a low point that you can understand. I wonder if any of us have ever been in a place like that. I'm always struck by that passage in Isaiah where it says, even our righteousness are but filthy rags. Do you ever have a time when you look back in your life and you suddenly have like a moment of realization that you cracked a joke that you thought was hilariously funny, but then at a later date you find out that the content of your joke made someone else in the room feel small. And so you go from feeling like, oh, I'm the funny guy, to, oh, actually, I was actually a bit of a bully there. Not intentionally, but nevertheless, the consequences were not good. And had I taken a little bit more time to think, so it wasn't that I thought, what is a nasty thing to do, and then chose to do it, but I didn't think and ended up doing something. I wonder if that's something of a translation of an understanding of this, even our righteousness is but filthy acts, because God sees the bigger picture, and so he comprehends, and so sometimes God's like, oh, and I can just imagine Jesus kind of looking on Peter at that moment and going, oh, Peter, this was so good, but you've not quite got as far as I thought you had. Or I hoped you had. I can see we've got to go back and learn a little bit more. I've certainly had many, many experiences like that in my own spiritual journey. Moving on then, what's the next one? There's another major one. Like we say, we've had several other things that have been mentioned where Peter is present, but he's not kind of one of the main characters. There's one more that comes before the two that the gentlemen here have mentioned. Do you love me? That's the final one we're going to come to. That's where we're going to land at the end. What about just before the Last Supper? And they arrive at the house. And what does Jesus offer to do as they enter the house? Wash their feet. And it's Peter that interacts with him, isn't it? And what does Peter say? No, 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 no. What are you doing? You're not my servant. You're my Messiah. So you can see again here, I can imagine that everybody in the room was thinking this, but Peter's the impetuous one. Now, when he blurts out, you're the Messiah, Peter then looks like, you know, king of the hill type thing, the one that's really learnt it. But in this setting here, he shows that he's really not learnt it. And it's tragic. But you've got to admire that Peter, because actually, wouldn't it have been worse if he hadn't said anything? Kind of. It's a really tricky one, this, to dissect. Because if he hadn't said anything, wouldn't it be a little bit inappropriate for us all to be a little bit too casual? Like, if Jesus walked in now, the Word in flesh, God incarnate, just revealed to us, the immortal, the invisible, God only wise, in light inaccessible, hid from our eyes, now not hid from our eyes. You know, Jesus, the creator of the world, walks in and offers to wash our feet. Now, I don't know about you, I've got manky feet, okay? You know, my wife loves me, but I'm not getting a foot massage this side of eternity, okay? My feet are terrible. Now, Jesus offers to wash my feet. That is not a pleasant job. And our natural reaction would be, indeed, perhaps it should be, to say no, no. So, again, at this point, high point, low point? Well, it's a low point in that he doesn't understand the person that Jesus is, but it's a high point because because it's a fair misunderstanding, because he's elevating Jesus to the place of Messiah, and at the Transfiguration, he's been taught that Jesus is higher than Moses and Elijah, and he's had an awkward lesson to learn that. And so he's had all these lessons, all these miracles that are pointing, Jesus is here, Jesus is here, Jesus is here. And then Jesus is stooping down here, and he's like, no, you're here, 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 not down here. So you understand it, but nevertheless, one of the biggest messages that Jesus needs him to comprehend is that, yes, he is king, but he's the servant king. You know, one of the biggest struggles that we have in our society, isn't it, is the distrust between the haves and the have-nots. The sense of disgruntlement, because so often amongst the normal working class of society, there is a sense that the people that are in positions of privilege, power, responsibility don't use that for our benefit, but use it for their own benefit, and we are used simply to prop up their privileged lifestyles, and that causes a great deal of resentment. And actually, the leaders that we love the most are the ones that we know that are using their position of privilege and power and influence for the benefit of everyone but themselves. And Jesus is the greatest example of that. The creator washing the feet of the created. So that one, it's kind of a high moment because it shows how highly regarded Peter has for Jesus, but it's a low moment because Jesus was like, you've not quite got it. Yes, you need to understand that I am the creator, the Messiah, and I'm going to be the savior, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to wash your feet. In fact, that is precisely why I'm going to wash your feet, because I'm the servant king. And then we come to, as was mentioned before, the denial three times, the cutting off of the ear. That cutting off of the ear one, that's like a tragic incident, isn't it? You've got the Prince of Peace being defended by acts of violence. Whew. That's like tragic. You know, you can... Remember the famous Indian character in Indian politics, Mahatma Gandhi? And his whole emphasis was on peaceful opposition to that which was wrong. So this is like the people of Mahatma Gandhi getting his name on a flag and then marching through the streets with weapons. And Gandhi's going, what are you playing at? You know, there are other revolutionary characters that have been quite happy to go down that route. But Gandhi never did. And so for the followers of Gandhi to do that would be a tragic, tragic misunderstanding of everything that Gandhi stood for. And here we have Jesus, the Prince of Peace, being defended with an act of violence. So there we have a low point in the life of Peter. On the same night, Jesus takes just a few of the disciples, because he's troubled, because he knows execution's coming, and he says, will you come and pray with me? And Peter falls asleep like the others. I don't know about you, have you ever had those dark nights of the soul when you've asked a friend to come and sit with you? And if you talk, and if you sat with that friend and they're just dozing off, it's a bit of an insult, isn't it? You really feel let down because this is the time when you wanted them by your side with you. And then, of course, it stoops even lower to the denial. Peter, who earlier in the evening was willing to take a sword to a soldier, has now had all the fight taken out of him, quite literally, and is now scared of a servant girl and won't even admit to being a friend of Jesus for fear that he's going to end. And I don't know if you've seen The Passion of the Christ, but if I remember correctly, in that one, it kind of shows the setting as being all one, that you've got Jesus tied up in the courtyard. And I think if I remember correctly, it shows Jesus looking up and them making eye contact. The cock crows, Jesus looks at Peter, Peter looks at Jesus, and Peter realizes, oh, he said I was going to do this, and I said I wouldn't. Whew. It's a bit of a roller coaster, isn't it, Peter's life? But don't you find that encouraging? Yeah, I do. When you look back over your life, and there are the things that you know that are the obvious low points, where you've just really messed up, and you've known it at the time. There are the things that you didn't realize at the time, but years later you look back on and you think, oh my word, I thought that was harmless, or I thought that was funny, but actually it wasn't. It was harmful and it was dangerous. As well as, I hope, the times when you think, you know what, that went well. I was faithful then, or I was brave then. Or I was sacrificial then, or I was servant-hearted then. All of our lives, I'm sure, have got that mixture of the highs and the lows. And then we have this account here, after the resurrection, again, a very well-known story, where Jesus has breakfast with his disciples. And they sat around eating. And you want to imagine now that this is akin to if... Let's put Tracy on a plateau, shall we? Let's raise her up to lofty heights, and Tracy can be the Jesus of our story. And Tracy just walks up and just says, what's your name? Lauren. Logan. My wife was called Lauren, which is why I looked. So I was like, oh, that's unusual. So Tracy goes, Logan, could I just have a word? And Logan knows that he's been bad-mouthing Tracy on his Facebook page. And he knows it, and he knows that Tracy knows it. And this breakfast, he didn't know Tracy was going to be here. And then Tracy says, Logan, can I have a word? And Logan just steps out the door with Tracy and goes for a bit of a walk. And in the story, Jesus asks the same question. Tracy says to Logan, Logan, do you respect me? Oh, yeah, Tracy, yeah, you know that I respect you. Yeah, but Logan, do you respect me? And Logan's like, oh, yeah, I do, I really do. At which point Tracy gets out a phone and just hits the app button for Facebook. And Logan can just see that blue and white logo, and his heart's beating, and he's feeling it. Do you respect me, Logan? Now, the interesting thing about the detail here, sorry for picking it on you there, Logan, but I hope you can cope. And the interesting thing about the detail of the story is that we don't pick up in English because we have the word for love, which is just love. Whereas in the Greek, they have three different words. You have eros, philia, and agape. Agape being godly love, the purest, the highest form of love. Philia being a good love. But it's more brotherly, sisterly, friendship, relational love. And then we have eros, which is more of the sexual, the desires nature. And Jesus, when he asked the question, he uses agape. And Peter ducks the question by saying, yes, you know that I filio. Okay, Jesus asks agape, Peter responds with filio. So there's something of integrity there, isn't there, where Peter recognizes the loftiness of the question being asked, and he recognizes that he is not worthy to answer that question. And so he gives a lesser answer. And actually, it's the true answer, isn't it? Because even when Peter denied Jesus, it wasn't that he hated Jesus. It wasn't that he didn't love Jesus. It's the same as what happened when he stepped out of that boat and walked on water. The circumstances around him became bigger than his relationship with Jesus. And how many of us have been in that position? Where the circumstances of our life have become bigger than our relationship with Jesus. And I can imagine at the time, Peter knew it. At the time, there are those occasions in our life when we're faced with making a choice. Do I go with the peer pressure, or do I stick with what a disciple of Jesus should do? Do I make the choice that is the one that will keep me up with the Joneses about how I spend my money? Do we have a Jones here? I know I'm in Wales, so there's a fellow. We do. We've got it. See, we've got plenty of Joneses to keep up with. Do I spend my money this way, or do I step out of the rat race and live a humbler life where I've therefore got a greater ability to be generous to others? But we feel the pressure. Those of us as parents, we feel the pressure because if we make the decision to be generous and to live the lower life, then we're actually asking our children to live that lower life with us. And what impact does that have on them and how they feel? All these things which are complicated. It can be so hard, a journey of discipleship with Jesus. And so as I think about this roller coaster journey of the life of Peter with the highs and the lows, and I think about my own life with its highs and its lows, and I see this encounter where you notice Jesus asked the question. He's not soft. He's not weak. Coming back onto our little illustration with Tracy and Logan, you know, it's not that Tracy just gets on with the breakfast and just pretends that Logan hasn't disrespected her. He does deal with it, but he's not dealing with it because he wants to make Peter feel bad. Remember my asking my grandfather a question when I was a child about the feelings of guilt that you sometimes get. And how can you tell if guilt is Satan trying to drag you down or the Holy Spirit trying to convict you? Because actually, it can be two quite similar feelings. And I remember my grandfather saying that the conviction of the Holy Spirit will always be calling you to higher places, whereas the condemnation that Satan wants to bring into your life will be dragging you to lower places. So he used to call it Satan's 1-2, which is a boxing term. You know, you lead with one punch, then you follow up with a second one. And what Satan tries to do is he tries to tempt us to do something wrong. That's his first punch. And then when we've done something wrong, he then tries to tell us that we're pathetic, we're worthless, and we might as well give up. That's his second punch. And the worst thing that we can do in our lives is to allow the fact that Satan has landed number one punch to allow him to land a second one, because there's no need. Jesus wants to offer grace when we've made a mistake in order to lift us up. He doesn't want to give us a second punch that drags us down. And so when I look at this story, I see Jesus who is strong. He doesn't avoid the conversation that he needs to have with Peter. But that is for Peter's benefit. That's not because Jesus needed to get it off his chest. That's not because Jesus wanted to give Peter a piece of his mind. It's because Peter needed to be reinstated. It's because Peter needed to get this off his chest. It's because Peter needed to be able to resign this to the history books. It's because Peter needed to get beyond this so that Peter could become the rock upon which Jesus was going to build his church. And so when we receive the conviction of the Holy Spirit, when we have made mistakes in our Christian journey, God will not avoid the conversation. The Spirit will convict us, but not a spirit of condemnation, for that is not the work of God. Rather, a spirit that wants to lift us to a higher place, because the Spirit realizes that the things that we've done wrong in our life need to be dealt with for our benefit, so that we can be reinstated, so that we can go on to better places. And Peter goes on to better places. And perhaps for some of us today, we need to hear that message. I'm sure all of us have got roller coaster journeys, each one unique. But let us look at the life of Peter and be encouraged that you can make a mistake. Now, this doesn't mean that you then think, oh, I'm going to go out and make loads of mistakes so that I can have loads of seaside walks with Peter and be reinstated every day. No, because Paul deals with that later, doesn't he? We don't sin so that grace may abound, because that shows that we don't really value the grace that we're receiving. It makes it cheap. No, we don't do that. The reinstatement is to take us to higher ground. But when we make a mistake, Jesus is always ready to forgive, to reinstate, to restore. So I don't know what your journey of faith is. I also don't know who isn't here this morning because their journey of faith is currently at a low place and they're in need of a reinstatement. And let us all think, how can we be the church that's like Jesus at this lakeside, that reaches into people's lives, not ducking the difficult question, the conversation that needs to be had, but motivated to have that conversation for the other person's interest. Not so that we can challenge them because they're not doing a good job of supporting the church and we think that they should be supporting the church more. No, so that we can reinstate them so that they can grow and thrive and flourish and become the disciples that God created them to be. And how can we be like Jesus, restoring others? So there's a two-pronged understanding from this passage today. For us to receive the restoration that Jesus offers and to know that he always offers that, and for us to be givers of the restoration that Jesus offers so that others can receive that as well. May God bless his word to our hearts this morning.